Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so tonight is officially the last scheduled cheer on the topic of Shatnez, and then we will have to move on to some other topics. We'll have to figure out exactly what comes next, but in all likelihood, we'll probably do something that's related to Purim. That's what I'm assuming, like to do 2 weeks on Purim, and then we'll move on to the next exciting topics, because then Pesach is coming, and that's a scary thought in my line of work. Okay, so I use Pleasant Cleaners up the hill as my cleaners, you know, up on 187th near Fort Rush. This guy Aram is like a real expert. He's a member of the Armenian Orthodox Church over here in the town. He's a very religious fellow, a great fellow. And one time my father bought me a jacket, and I needed to be checked for Shatnez. So I'm speaking to Aram. I'm like, do you know who checks for Shatnez in town and stuff? I relatively recently moved here. I didn't know that like Breuer's existed. I didn't know about Berkowitz. I was like a newcomer. So Aram is like, what's the problem? I'll tell you if it's Shatnez. I know wool. I know linen. I'm an expert. And he has really good hands. And he has really good eyes. He has a really good sense. Question. Is Aram able to check for Shatnez for me? Question. Let's say I go shopping in the store and the merchant tells me, Rabbi, dude, fellow, you don't have to check that for Shatnez. That suit we've sold hundreds of times. No one has ever come to say it's Shatnez. Can you trust them? What do you say, Julian?
Does he know what Shatnez is?
So he says he knows. And Aram told me he knows wool and linen, and he actually knows textiles very well. Can I trust him? So Pinchas is suggesting that there is a halachic category that an expert is believed in halacha, even if the expert is non-Jewish, because there's a concern that otherwise the expert might lose his or her job. And let's be honest, fear of hitting one's wallet is one of the most substantial fears that exists on our planet. And therefore, the Gemara says, let's look at it over here, the top source, the Tosis in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin mentions that we can trust a professional baker to identify that there is no milk taste in a chalent. If you're a professional and you're a non-Jew, you're a kfela arma'a, right? So let's say I pour some milk in the chalent, right? By the way, milk should not go in chalent. You pour milk in the chalent, so how do you know if there's going to be flavor of the milk? So the Gemara says you could have a kfela arma'a, you could have a non-Jewish baker. Bakers apparently have very sensitive taste buds. I have no idea. And the kfela arma'a will tell me if there is the flavor. Tosis asks, how can you believe this guy? He's not Jewish. So it's Afagav de Ovid Kochadim, who? Kevon de Kfelahu, lo Meshakir, shelo Yasir Umnaso. Tosa says, even though the guy is not Jewish, but since he's a baker, and since he knows that people are going to stop sending stuff to Slobodan's bakery if they find out that Slobodan is my official name for a non Jew, no? I used to use Ignatz as my official non-Jewish name. Then a guy who was in my share told me that his grandfather was named Ignatz. So that didn't help. So I was thinking of using Jesus. But I figured that Slobodan is a much better name than Jesus, no? You don't know anyone Jesus. Jewish named Slobodan. Then there's
no,
a guy...
No, non-Jewish named Slobodan.
But no, Slobodan Milosevic.
Yeah.
He was the strong man in Yugoslavia who like killed millions of people.
You're older than me.
Sounds like a tennis player.
Huh?
Sounds like a tennis player. Yeah.
Football player. So, Tosis basically says that you can trust a non-Jew who would potentially lose his job because that fear is enough to believe them. Now, what's interesting over here is that it's not exactly simple that this could help in our case of Shatnez. You see, let's say Aram. Aram, my wonderful, he's, by the way, this is like a public service announcement. He happens to be, in my opinion, the best cleaners in the Heights. So if Aram says he can check for Shabbos, and let's say you find out that Aram didn't know what he was doing, he messed up, would people stop sending business to Aram?
They would stop sending their Shabbos.
So they'd stop sending their Shabbos stuff to him, but would it really hurt him in the pocketbook? So, it's what? You assume he's lying. It could be.
He's not lying. Maybe he's just misunderstood.
So, well, he told me. He knows Shatnez, he knows well and linen, and he gives me this whole thing. He says, you know, in men's suits, you have it in the collar, and he knows how to remove it. He gives me this whole thing. He knows what to do.
But you trust by betrayal or anything?
What?
You trust by actually for taking
the paper. So that's another question. Let's say I have a Jew test for Shatnez. And then the Jew finds Shatnez, so I need a good tailor. You see, over here, they check this for Shatnez, which means that they, like, make a cut in the collar, and they feel inside, is there a canvas? If there's a canvas, you have to test that canvas to make sure it's not linen. That's basically the main work of the Shatnez tester. So I've had suits that they found Shatnez in. So then you have to take it out. Who can take it out? Is Aram Ne'eman, is he trusted to take the Shatnez out or not? I have to admit, I did not send my stuff to Aram to have the Shatnez taken out. I sent it to I found a Frum cleaner in Borough Park, a Hasidish Yid. I sent it to him to take it out. He happened not to have the best set of hands. And again, it doesn't... You can't notice on the outside, but the way he sewed up the lining, it's not as nice on the inside. Okay, it says in Shulchan Aruch that if I buy a talis from a Jew or from a non-Jew, and the non-Jew says that he bought it from a Jew, so the non-Jew is believed. So I go to a store outside, and I see a guy selling a talis, and the guy is named Slobodan. And Slobodan tells me he bought the talis from somebody named Yankel Shmerel, right? From a Jew. So I'm allowed to buy it from the non-Jew because the non-Jew, we assume, bought it from a Jew and he won't mess up his profession. If I buy it, that's if I buy it from a real salesman. Then the Magen Avraham writes...
If I got from the back of the truck, that's another story.
If I got from the back of the truck, it's a different story, right? But I walk into a store and they're selling a talis, so I'm allowed to buy it, and I can assume that the tzitzis were made properly, and it's all kosher. The reason for this, the Magen Avraham quotes, is because if the guy's lying, people won't want to buy from him, and we quote, I'm just reading from the Magen Avraham, and quote later on in Shulchan Aruch, that even by Isurim, you can rely on the merchant. Nonetheless, the Magen Avraham writes, "Mikol makom tzarchiin." The Mashal Hashem Davka B'David Ikka Kpeida Blum Naso. He goes Murayis Shema Arim Bochometz Devaziyof Afil LaAkom. Abahocha Yesh Lachush Shenitva Shelo Lishma VeLo Maranavshe Bezeh Teida Da Atu Mishari Liknos Basa MeAkom Tagik Shomer Shehik Sheira Misham DeLo Maranavshe. Says the Magen Avraham, you know what? The case in the Gemara, when a non-Jewish merchant is believed, is if the non-Jewish merchant is selling pomegranate juice. Now, apparently, pomegranate juice is often mixed with wine. Wine is treif. Wine of non-Jews is treif, no? And they add wine to the pomegranate juice sometimes. But the pomegranate juice merchant says, you know what? Trust me, there's no wine in this. So we say over there, he's believed. Says the Magen Avraham, maybe the only reason why he's believed in that case is because no one is going to buy pomegranate juice from a merchant who's deceitful and is saying that there is no wine in there when there really is wine. Even non-Jews won't buy from him. But if I have a case where only the Jews won't buy if you find out that he's lying, but the guy's still going to have his business... So in that case, says the Magen Avraham, that's not called Lomura Umnase. Right? And he argues, let's say you have a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is selling meat. The non-Jew says, you know what, I know this meat was slaughtered properly, halachically. It's kosher meat. Can you trust him? No way. Why not? And he's not going to lie. The answer is no. He only won't lie if he'll lose his entire business. But let's say the Jews don't buy from him. He still is going to sell treif meat and everything will be wonderful. So therefore, he does not, he is not trusted. So I cannot trust a guy to remove the shatnez. I can only trust the guy to remove the shatnez if I have a good way afterwards of identifying that he did it properly, which basically would mean they have to send it back to the shatnez checker again, which sort of defeats the purpose. Right? So if you find shatnez in your suit, so you really should get a Jew to remove the shatnez, or else it could be a problem. Next, there is a discussion in Shulchan Aruch that am I allowed to trust a non-Jew who's selling clothing, and the non-Jew says, you know what, there is no linen in this clothing. Do you trust the non-Jew? So Shulchan Aruch discusses that if you live in a place where linen is more expensive than other fibers, for example, the Western world, no? My understanding is that linen is more expensive than the other fibers that you use to sew stuff.
I mean, it depends which other fibers.
This...
I don't know, but is it more expensive than silk? Is it more expensive than...
I don't know. I think silk is not commonly used to sew stuff up. Okay. The commonly used fibers that they used to sew stuff up today is like nylon, most thread.
Right?
To use linen is uncommon. So Shulchan Aruch discusses whether the non-Jew is believed that it's not linen in it. If I give the non-Jew some string, some thread to sew it up, then I don't assume he'll switch it around. But if I don't give him thread, there's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. Nonetheless, the practice is that we trust the non-Jew, even though some are machmir, the practice is that we trust the non-Jew to say that there is no linen. So I'm allowed to go, in theory, according to Shulchan Aruch, I'm allowed to go to a store, and I see a suit, and I can ask, what's in the suit? And they'll tell me, no linen. Or I go to, well, let's go like this. If I go to a store and I buy a suit off the rack, the merchant has no idea what's in there. And the merchant won't be able to tell. Even if the merchant says there's no linen, you know what we say? Gay fife in the schwarzen yam. What do you tell me? You don't know. You have no idea what's in there. Right? You're reading the label the same as I'm reading the label. You don't know. But if I go to a tailor to have something made for me, right? You know the custom-made suits? It used to be a thing. Probably for your bar... Did you have a custom-made suit for your bar mitzvah?
Low hands.
What?
Low hands. They keep you kosher. They have an advertisement
that
said, we keep
you kosher. That was what they need?
That's it.
So, my father went to... My grandfather didn't have much money. He took my father to a tailor in Montreal to make him a custom-made suit for his bar mitzvah. And this was supposed to be my father's custom-made suit. He was like so excited. And then somehow the tailor lost all of my father's measurements. My father had to get a suit off the rack for his bar mitzvah. And like this was very disappointing. And he still talks about it. What?
Did he ever get over it?
Yeah. I mean, this happened in 1949. My father's bar mitzvah was in 1949. No, 1947. So, whatever. Okay. So now...
It's coming back.
Right? Coming back to Judaism. Right? So if I have a tailor who's making me a custom-made suit, I don't have to worry that he's going to put linen into the suit, because linen is more expensive and he'll use cheaper materials. That's the basic din that says here in Shulchan Aruch. This is what leads the Williamsburg Shatnez lab to say that in our world, you don't really have to check many outfits for shatnez, because it's more expensive to use linen than not to use linen.
You mean as the lining or the thread?
As the threads. The only real issue they have for shatnez is the lining in men's suits in general. Women's outfits, the Williamsburg Shatnez lab assumes is not a problem. Unless there's like a design on certain sweaters, when often there's like a thing underneath, like that design, Right? So that is, so then sometimes they have Shabbos, but the Williamsburg layout is basically relying on what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that if the linen is more expensive than the other materials, so you assume that there's no linen. Now here's the thing. Suits, outfits, clothing is generally made today in the Far East. It's made in China. And they want to make everything as cheap as possible. But they also have factories that are not exactly, how do we say, monitored by any government oversight. If there's real government oversight. So then I have a statement that Rav Moshe Feinstein made about milk. You know, the Gemara says that you're not supposed to drink milk of non-Jews. Right? You have to drink Chol of Yisrael. Because there's a concern that maybe they're not milking a cow, or maybe they're adding a little bit, right? If it's milk from a non-kosher animal, it won't look white the same as cow milk does. But maybe to save some money, they're adding a little bit of horse milk into the milk. So therefore, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to drink milk of non-Jews. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a leniency, which is widely accepted in our communities. Rav Moshe says that since there's government oversight, and the people on the farm would face fines if they adulterate the milk, so therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you know what? You can rely on the government oversight. And then someone else wrote back to Rav Moshe, but what do you mean? The fines aren't that steep. The fines are only $25 to $100 if they catch you the first time. Apparently about the third time they catch you, the fine gets steep. But Rav Moshe says, you know what? He doesn't think it's because of the amount of money that you pay. It's because of the lack of the loss to your reputation. The government oversight is enough. Well, in this book, Hashatnez Lahalacha Lama'aseh, which I stole from the YU Library. I took it out of the YU Library. I'll say it like that. So in that book, in this book, they have a long essay about, is there any government oversight in the Far East on these factories? The short answer is, not really. But there is customs oversight. Right? When they ship the stuff to the States, let's say, to, right, they ship the suits. So the customs is customs oversight. But the customs oversight is not looking for these types of things. So therefore, the feeling is that Rav Moshe's true Chol Yisrael won't apply. Maybe you could rely on the fact, though, that there's no reason why they would put linen in, because linen is more expensive, and effectively, what the Williamsburg Shatnez Lab is saying is that you only have to check for Shatnez when there is a Miyot HaMotzoi, when there's a 10% likelihood that there's going to be Shatnez, only then do you have to check. Less than 10%, there is no need to check. That's their argument. And therefore, right, in a suit, you only have to check the collar, nothing else. Now, the Lakewood Shatnez Laboratory operates by very different rules. If you get a suit checked in Lakewood, they will not only take a little snip at the collar, they'll take a cut at the bottom of the lining, and they'll reach up if there's a to see if there's a, what's it called, inside. They will also, because occasionally they find some Shatnez in the buttons, they will take off the buttons. Sometimes they have found Shatnez in the buttons. So the Lakewood Shatnez Laboratory will take off one of the buttons.
What do you mean in the buttons? In the
thread. There are buttons on the sleeve.
No, you mean in the thread.
In the threads of the buttons. They will take it off and test it. The way they test for Shatnez, by the way, is with a microscope. Linen looks different than wool. That's practically. The Gemara actually talks about testing for Shatnez that you could dye it. And the dye is absorbed differently in wool than it is in linen. But let's be honest, if your suit would come back with like little orange patches on it, because, oh, we tested it for Shatnez, you see?
You can take out the patch from the collar and do the dyeing, make it gerhadin.
What about However, some of the poskim say that we're not sure exactly which dyes they use. Then there's another discussion the Ramah writes in Shin Beis that you could burn it, and there's a wool and burn differently. You could do that, although some poskim say that that's not an absolute proof. The assumption is that the microscope is an absolute proof. Frida.
Well, we know we can tell linen from wool, but can you tell, when you're looking at the button thread, can you tell linen from nylon?
Yeah, they can.
Because
they put it under a microscope.
Well, that you could do pretty easily.
I mean, that's how they check for shatnez. The difference between Lakewood and Williamsburg is that Williamsburg will just check those few areas, and mostly men's suits. Lakewood will check much more. Now,
is that everybody in Williamsburg?
The Williamsburg shatnez lab.
Oh, okay.
I spoke to the guy. I mentioned last week in the share. I spoke to the Williamsburg guy. He said, like, ugh, this was an issue 20 years ago. That was his line. Okay, now, as a matter of halacha, there are 18 treifas in an animal. Right? Let's say an animal is an amputee above the knee. An animal has a brain membrane with a hole in it. The animal is non-kosher. Practically speaking, after we shecht an animal, the only thing that we check is the lungs. We blow the lungs up. Usually they have like a machine with air. Like, the, you know the way you fill up a tire? So they fill up the lungs with that. If you have a sheikha with a good set of lungs, I don't know if you ever saw this. Pinchas, you ever saw it? A sheikha, like, put his mouth on it and blow into the lungs and...
Now they have what you blow up the mattresses.
They have like machines now. It makes it much quicker and much easier. But the old shochtim knew to do it this way. So basically, Rashi writes in Chulin that we only check the lungs. We don't check anything else. We rely on Rove. The halacha says, Achrei Rabim Lahatos. And that is true by a Ruba de Issa Kamon. Ruba de Issa Kamon means I have 10 pieces of meat in front of me. 9 are kosher, 1 is non-kosher. That's Ruba de Issa Kamon. I have a set in front of me. Ruba de Lesa Kamon is I know in the world that there's a majority like this. The halacha is that we follow Rov, both by Ruba de Issa Kamon and Ruba de Lesa Kamon, even though the pasuk of Achari Rabim Lahatos is only about Ruba de Issa Kamon. Achari Rabim Lahatos means like if I have... What? Yeah, I have a Sanhedrin. I have, let's say, 23 judges. And those 23 judges are going to say whether you're Chayiv Misa or not, whatever it is. Well, that's a Ruba de Issa Kamon. They're all here. The fact that I rely on Rove by Ruba de Lesa Kamon is not clear what the source of that is. Either it also comes from the Pasuk of Achrei Rabim Lahatos, or as Rashi says, that's a Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Well, if I rely on Rove, how come I check the lungs to make sure that's not treif? So Rashi answers, because it's shchiach b'reisa. Because having problems in the lungs are likely. That's what Rashi says. Now, what does that mean? So the Rashba in Chulin Daf Tes, the Ramban in Chulin Daf Yudbeis, they both say the same thing. They coin a term called a miyuta matsuri. Miyuta matsuri means a likely minority. And whenever there's a likely minority, they say you have to check. And the assumption, according to that, is that you have to check the lungs because the lungs have a likely minority. We don't know exactly what miyuta matsui is. There's a tshuva in the Rivash and Simon Reish Tzadi Aleph that miyuta matsui is close to 50%. The Mishkanis Yankiv says miyuta matsui is 10%. Or others say miyuta matsui is 5% to 7.5%. And the Sheva Talevi in the tshuva that I give you on the second side of the page over here, the Sheva somewhere, right? The Sheva Talevi says that in his opinion you can't give specific numbers for miyuta matsui. It's just what do people get nervous about? What do people think is a problem? Rav Salvechik, for example, felt that on goats you have to also check the stomach because goats walk around and they eat the top of fence poles. And when you eat the top of a fence pole, apparently it will pierce your insides. Do not try this. Don't go and eat the top of a fence pole. It's not healthy, and it tastes worse than oatmeal without any spice. Now, trust me. Not that I ate it, but I'm sure it does. So, the Rashba writes that Mia Tamotze is what we check for. We're not exactly sure what the number of Mia Tamotze is. Most work with 10%. This, by the way, is not only relevant for Shabbos, it's relevant for bug checking. The infestation level of bugs that would require checking of the bugs is only if it's 10%. Now, it's not exactly clear, though, 10% of what by bugs? Does 10% mean that if I'm going to get a bug in one out of every 10 bites? Or does 10% mean one out of every 10 serving sizes? Right? It's not exactly clear. In the OU tshuvas, they discuss this at length. What does 10% mean? The standard approach is serving sizes rather than bites. This is very relevant for the New York City water. If you're worried about the bugs in the New York City water with the copepods, so you could technically say, well, I'm not going to have a bug in one of every 10 glasses of water.
Wait, what are these bugs?
There are bugs called copepods, which are some of the most hardy bugs in all of creation.
Can you see them?
You can see them when they're alive. But once they're dead, they look like dots in the water. When they're alive, you can see they move around, they do a dance, it's like the hora. They're amazing, right? But once they're dead, they appear only as dots. You can see them as dots, and then if you look at them with magnification, you can see that they're actually bugs. There was a discussion about the bugs in New York City water years ago. The OU is machmir on the bugs in New York City water. They feel that it's a problem. I was with Rabbi Schechter when this guy Moskowitz from the Lower East Side came up with like various types of water that he brought from various ponds to show Rabbi Schechter the copepods.
What does that mean they're mocking on the water? That
you have to filter the water.
Oh, filter the water.
You have to filter the water, and the filter has to be at least 25 microns, which the standard filter is. An aerator is not enough, but a standard filter is enough.
What do you mean, like a standard filter as in?
Like a Brita certainly works, or like any filter generally will filter to less than 25 microns. That's the way it works. Okay, so why do we check the lungs and nothing else? So the Rashba writes, because miut matzui. However, then the Rashba gives two other reasons. He quotes from his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Yonah. He writes, you know what? You have to remove the things, the michsholim, which are nikar la'ayin. You have to remove those lung problems because they are very noticeable. And, he writes, if you don't find, if the animal is actually trafe because of the problematic lung, it's going to mess everything up. It's going to mess up all of your pots are going to become treif also. And therefore, you have to check the lungs. You don't have to check the other stuff because it's not really nikar la'ayin. The other ones aren't as noticeable. The lung, you just look at it. You have an adhesion, a sirch on the lung or not. So the lungs you have to check. That's reason one of the Rabbeinu Yonah. Then he writes, the old time, the top of page two, another reason is that the, again, it's very similar, just that it's very noticeable. The lungs, the problems are very noticeable, and therefore the Rabbeinu Yonah says, you have to check it. Now, if we accept the Rashba's reasoning, or the Ramban's reasoning, or what we're saying is Rashi, that you have to check whenever there's 10%, so then by Shatnez also you have to check because it's 10%. But if I follow the Rabbeinu Yonah's reasoning, that I only have to check stuff that's very noticeable, in other words, it's going to be like a blemish. People are going to see that. What do you mean? That's a kosher animal? Look at those lungs. It's disgusting. Right?
You don't get the lungs when you get the animal.
But you know what? People would go in their times into the Schlachtes and they'd buy an animal and the animal would be hanging there. Right? And people would look at it and say, oh, it's disgusting. Treif. Right? So they'll say, right? Who are you? What are you doing? Right? So that's why you have to check it, according to the Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rabbeinu Yonah's reason would not be relevant for checking Shatnez at all. Nonetheless, there is a wrinkle in this entire discussion. The wrinkle is as follows. The Gemara in Kedushin talks about a din of Sivlonos. Sivlonos is actually relevant to Purim, which is coming up. I remember as a high school kid, they used to tell all of us, don't give shalach manos to girls, no?
What?
Because you have to be worried that maybe you'll be marrying her if you give her that pineapple with the thing of plum wine, right? Because that could count as marriage. She's not wearing a white dress. So what? You don't say harayat. So really, it's not a concern of marriage as kedushin per se, but it's a concern that the Gemara has something called sivlonos, which is that you wouldn't send gifts. Single guys wouldn't send gifts to single girls unless they're already married halachically before the full consummation of marriage before nesuin. After kedushin, before nesuin, then you'll send gifts. And the Gemara speaks about that there's a place, the Makdashiva Hadar Maspali. There are places that they give gifts after the Kiddushin. And then there are other places where it's Maspali Vahadar Makdashi. Then there are other places where they give the gifts before the Kiddushin. Now, the way this Gemara boils down, and there are different Girsaos, but the Ran over here in Kiddushin quotes that the Gaonim have a text that most people are maspali v'hadar makdashi. Most people give the gifts before the actual kedushin, in which case, if you see a guy he's sending a gift to a girl, there's no problem. But there is a minority who do kedushin followed by the gifts, and I would think that just like ordinarily in halacha, we don't concern ourselves with minority opinions or minority positions, but over here, we have to be worried about the minority. And therefore, right, we have to worry that even though the majority are makdashi v'hadar maspali, still we have to worry for the minority opinion. That's what the Ga'inim say. Now, the Ran writes, Nihi de ba'al maloch ha'shin l'miyuta,
says
the Ran, and this is found in the Ritva, there in Kedushin and others, they all say the same idea, that a rove is something that is established. But that case in the Gemara in Kedushin, it's not really a roof. It's really a minhag. Right? Most people do it this way. That's not a full-fledged roof. A majority is something that's like built into nature. Right? It's built into nature that most young people will develop and become mature. Right? So a young woman is not going to be an islandess. A katan will not be a saris. Most people mature physically. That's a rove, because that's built into nature. But over here, says the Ran, says the Ritva, it's not a real rove, it's a minhag. And if it's a minhag, so therefore you have to be worried about the minority opinion. So some of the poskim say, whoa, one second. Shatnez, is that nature? Not at all. Shatnez is like a minhag. That the way the textile industry works is that people make it this way. And therefore, even though there's an overwhelming majority that there is no shatnez, because why on earth would they use linen because it's more expensive, like we pointed out, etc., etc., but you still gotta check. Because it's like a minority on something that's a minhag, and a minority with something like a minhag, you have to be worried about. Now, if you hold of this opinion, you end up in Lakewood. In other words, the Lakewood Shatnez Lab, whose approach is to look for stuff that is not a miyot hamatzui, is based on this opinion in the Ran. This opinion that says, you know what, it's not really a rove. It's a rove garua, right? That's the way he phrases it. And therefore, you have to check everything. That's what emerges from this position. Now, if I take the position of the Ramban, Rashi, the position that you have to look for something that is a miyot hamatzui, we actually have a leniency. Let me explain it. We're assuming the standard approach of Schefter, Paskins this way, which is like what Williamsburg does, you only have to check when there's a 10% likelihood. But there's a big leniency. The leniency is, it says in Shulchan Aruch that I'm supposed to check the lungs. But let's say I can't check the lungs. Let's say an animal runs into the Schlachtweis, pulls the lungs out, and you'll never find the lungs again. So in that case, it's kosher. The animal is fine. The halacha of checking is a din l'chatchila. Right? L'chatchila, I'm supposed to check. Ab initio. How do you say it in, like... Right? That's what you're supposed to check. But if it's not left, but b'diyevin, you don't have to. Now, that would mean as follows. If you live in a community where there's no shatnez checker, you could wear the suit without checking if you hold of this Rashi, Ramban, Miut, right, Hamotzi approach. Because, right, the din of checking is a din l'chatchila. Now, should you send it to a different town to get checked? Yeah, if you can, of course you can. But if you're living in the island of Shmendrik, right, somewhere out there, so then you could wear the suit without checking.
If you don't have time to check
it before Shabbos or before a Yom Tov or something.
To wear it and then afterwards check it.
Correct. In other words, because the din of checking is a din l'chatchila. However, if I follow the other approach, the approach that may ikar hadin, I cannot follow the rove, because this is not a rove, it's really a minhag. So then, A, I have to check, even if there's a tiny concern. B, there's no indication that bidi eved, right? There's no indication that checking is only l'chatchila, according to this approach. Now, the Shev Shmaitza has an essay in chapter 4 of the Shmaitza, Perek Dalid on the Din Vav, however you say in the Shmaitza. The Shmaitza writes that this Ran is a Chumrah only by Kedushin. This idea that something that is not natural is not a full rove, and therefore you always have to check, that's only for marriage purposes. But for other purposes, it's not correct. That would mean, right, that we're back to our 10%. Right? That would emerge according to that Shev Shmaitza analysis. There's another issue to discuss just very quickly. There's a Tshuvas HaRashba that makes it to the Ramah in Yerudei Simen Pei Daled. Let's say something is known to have bugs in it. Do you have to check the entire thing of lettuce? Or is it enough to just check a little bit and see if there's no bugs?
What?
So two or three, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that's a determinant that's so infested that checking might not help. Right? It becomes muchzak b'tolayim. But let's say I have something that just has a miyut hamatzli. So the Rashba writes in the Tshuva, and the Ramah Paskins this way, you really have to check the entire thing. Right? Someone asked me about checking the full lettuce, or do you only check a couple leaves of the lettuce? Someone just asked me this yesterday for some reason. So in big industry, in big factories, or in restaurants, they're lenient to only check a few leaves from an entire shipment. Or a few heads of an entire shipment. I should say a few heads
of each box.
What?
From each box.
From each box, an entire shipment, they'll check. And then they'll determine this shipment is not infested. At home, though, you should really follow the Ramah and check everything. Now, our approach that you only have to check for shatness if there's a 10% likelihood makes a lot of sense. But Lakewood has firm basis from a tshuva and Reb Moshe Feinstein. This is the last source that we'll do tonight. Last source. Right? Reb Moshe is not discussing checking for shatness directly. He says, are you allowed to sell clothing? I have a suit store. Can I sell clothing to Jews that may or may not have shatness? I'm not sure. So Reb Moshe discusses it lifnei iver, and let's say the Jew doesn't care about the prohibition of shatnez, no? So he walks into the store, wants to buy a suit. I say, you know what? It might have shatnez. And the guy says, whoo, shat, what? Like, Shav Iran? Like, what are you talking about? Right? See, what's going on over here? So Reb Moshe writes, if it's a real suffix, in other words, that there's a likelihood, a decent chance that there's shatnez, you're not allowed to sell it. And it's not enough to tell them that it might be shatnez because they don't care. And even though they could buy this stuff somewhere else, and it's only an Isser Drabanan, nonetheless, you still shouldn't do it. Messiah by an Isser Drabanan, and you shouldn't do it. However, if it's only a chshash ba'alma, if it's only a small likelihood, for example, it's a miyot she'ein al matzah, that may ikar adin you follow rove, but we are only machmir because you can be mevarer, then you're allowed to sell it. So if you read this last line, Igus Moshe, it's very interesting. Rav Moshe said, you have something that's a miyot she'ein al matzah, right? Which we're translating is less than 10%. So Rav Moshe says, you know what, you're allowed to sell the suit, but you still have to check it. Because, right? Because you can be mevarer. We don't follow a rove, says Rav Moshe, in a situation that you could check it out. So Rav Moshe says, since you could check it out, you have to check it out. Rav Yosef used to pass in this way. Also, he said anything that had the likelihood of shatness between 1% and 10%, you should check. This is not standard Judaism. In our general approach, we don't check for bugs if it's less than 10%. We don't check for shatness if it's less than 10%. Although Rav Moshe is, bugs might be different than shatness because bugs is natural and shatness isn't. But we assume 10% applies across the board, and we don't check things that are between that 1% and 10% threshold. In this book, Shatness LaHalacha LaMaaseh, he has two opinions about that, but my understanding is that the standard approach is that we do not check, and we should not wear shatness. Okay, so... Actually, what?
The last thing he's saying is absolutely really what he's saying.
So the din is that we don't follow a rove when it can be mevarer. Rove mitzvah nitzah shchito mom. If it's not a tirchot, right. So if there's a huge tirchot to mevarer, right, so that's the question. And these types of... So you should know... let me quote from the Shatnez book one more thing. So many people in Yerushalayim were following Rebbe Yoshev's psak that even if it's unlikely, since it's possible to check, you should check it. And the lines that the Shatnez checkers were getting very long. So if Shimshon Pinkus, who was like a big Baal Musar in Yerushalayim, he said, you know what? I don't understand. Like, you're waiting online, there's a tircha for everybody, just rely on the other opinions, or let only the people who really need to check, let them check, and don't make everybody crazy. End of, right? Now, I like that comment. It like resonates with me. That's what Rabbi Pinkus said. It's quoted here in this book. What? The Baal Musar, because he's sensitive to people. And he's sensitive also, he has a line, he says, if their line is so long about the Shatnez checker can't do a good job. Because everyone is waiting and he feels rushed. So what do you accomplish? That's the way he said it.
So when you buy a suit, how do you check the stats? How do you know whether it's...
Okay, so when you buy a suit, practically speaking, look at the label. You'll be surprised how many times you could see on the label that it says wool and linen. Now, the label is not absolutely proof to anything, but generally speaking, if it says wool and linen, it's going to be shatnez. If it doesn't say wool and linen, if it says polyester, you don't have to check it at all. If it is wool, so then you really should check a min, so you should check the collar.
Polyester suits, you would say, 100% polyester suits?
You don't have to check.
How could you...
There's no wool, there's no wool. Even if there's linen, there's no wool.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, so, again, so I'm assuming that if the chash is so little, that we're not following the Rav Moshe. If the chash is so little, blessing me a tamotzi, you don't have to check. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, have a good evening.